and she unwittingly followed the light to the small chamber deep in the cave of the mountains, far to the east. More than grief and guilt, she was weak from lack of food and suffering from milk fever from her swollen, aching, unsuckled breasts. But even more than that, she was suffering from a depression Issa could have helped her with if she had been there. For Ayla was a medicine woman, dedicated to easing pain and saving life, and Issa was her first patient who had died. What Ayla needed most was her baby. She not only needed to nurse him, she needed the demands of caring for him to bring her back to reality, to make her understand that life goes on. But when she returned to the cave, Dirk was asleep beside Uba. Reb had taken him to Olga to feed again. Ayla tossed and turned, unable to sleep, not even realizing that it was fever and pain that kept her awake. Her mind was turned too deeply inward, dwelling on her sorrow and guilt. She was gone when Kreb woke up. She had wandered out of the cave and climbed the bluff again. Kreb could see her from a distance and watched her anxiously, but he couldn't see her weakness or her fever.
"Should I go after her?" Bron asked, as baffled as Kreb by Ayla's reaction.
"She seems to want to be alone. Maybe we should let her," Kreb answered.
He worried about her when he could no longer see her, and when she still hadn't returned by evening, he asked Brun to look for her. Kreb was sorry he hadn't let Brun go after her sooner when he saw the leader carrying her back to the cave. Grief and depression had taken their toll. Weakness and fever had done the rest. Uba and Abra cared for the clan's medicine woman. She was delirious, alternately shaking with chills and burning with fever. She cried out if her breasts were barely touched.
"She's going to lose her milk," Abra said to the girl. "It's too late for Dirk to do any good now. The milk is caked. He can't draw it out."
"But Dirk is too young to be weaned. What will happen to him? What will happen to her?"
It might not have been too late if Issa had been alive or if Ayla had been coherent. Even Uba knew there were poultices that might have helped, medicines that might have worked, but she was young and unsure of herself, and Abra seemed so positive. By the time the fever passed, Ayla's milk had dried up. She could no longer feed her own son.
"I will not have that deformed brat at my hearth, Olga. I will not have him brother to your sons."
Braud was furious, shaking his fists, and Olga was cowering at his feet.
"But Braud, he's just a baby. He's got to nurse. Aga and Ika don't have enough milk. It wouldn't do any good for them to keep him. I have enough. I've always had too much milk. If he doesn't eat, he'll starve, Braud. He'll die."
"I don't care if he dies. He should never have been allowed to live in the first place. He will not live at this hearth."
Olga stopped shaking and stared at the man who was her mate. She didn't really believe he would refuse to let her keep Ayla's baby. She knew he would rant and rave and storm about it, but in the end, she was sure he would allow it. He couldn't be that cruel. He couldn't let a baby starve to death, no matter how much he hated Dirk's mother.
"Braud, Ayla saved Brock's life. How can you let her son die?"
"Hasn't she gotten enough for saving his life? She was allowed to live. She was even allowed to hunt. I don't owe her anything."
"She wasn't allowed to live. She was cursed with death. She returned from the world of the spirits because her totem wanted her to. He protected her," Olga protested.
"If she had been cursed properly, she wouldn't have returned, and she would never have given birth to that brat. If her totem is so strong, why did she lose her milk? Everyone said her baby would be unlucky. What could be more unlucky than losing his mother's milk? Now you want to bring his bad luck to this hearth. I will not allow it, Olga. That's final."
Olga sat back and looked up at Braud with calm deliberation.
"No, Braud," she motioned. "It's not final."
She was no longer timorous. Braud's expression turned to shocked surprise.
"You can keep Dirk from living at your hearth. That is your right, and I can't do anything about it. But you can't keep me from nursing him. That is a woman's right. A woman may nurse any baby she wants, and no man can keep her from it. Ayla saved my son's life, and I will not let hers die. Dirk will be brother to my sons, whether you like it or not."
Braud was stunned. His mate's refusal to abide by his wishes was totally unexpected. Olga had never been insolent, never been disrespectful, never shown the least sign of disobedience. He could hardly believe it.
Shock turned to fury. "How dare you defy your mate, woman? I'll make you leave this hearth," he stormed.
Then I will take my sons and leave, Braud. I will beg another man to take me. Maybe Mogur will allow me to live with him if no other man will have me. But I will nurse Ayla's baby.
His only answer was a sharp blow with a hard fist that knocked her flat. He was too filled with rage for any other reply. He started after her again, then turned on his heel. I will see about such blatant disrespect, he thought, as he stalked to Brunn's hearth.
First she contaminates Issa. Now her willfulness has spread to my mate, Braud gesticulated the moment he stepped beyond the boundary stones. I told Oga I would not have Ayla's son. I told her I did not want that deformed boy as brother to her sons. Do you know what she said? She said she would nurse him anyway. She said I couldn't stop her. She said he would be brother to her sons whether I liked it or not. Can you believe it? From Oga, from my mate.
She's right, Braud, Brunn said with controlled calm. You can't stop her from nursing him. What baby a woman suckles is not a man's concern. It has never been a man's concern. He has more important things to worry about. Brunn was not at all pleased at Braud's violent objection. It was degrading for Braud to be so emotionally concerned in matters that were in a woman's domain. And who else could do it? Dirk was clan, especially after the Bear Festival, and clan always took care of their own. Even the woman who had come from another clan and never produced a single child was not left to starve after her mate died. She may have had no value, she may have been a burden, but as long as the clan had food, she was given enough to eat. Braud could refuse to take Dirk into his hearth. That imposed the responsibility of providing for him and training him along with Oga's sons. Brunn wasn't happy about it, but it wasn't unexpected. Everyone knew how he felt about Ayla and her son. But why should he object if his mate nursed the boy? They were all the same clan.
Do you mean to tell me that Oga can be willfully disobedient and get away with it? Braud raged.
Why should you care, Braud? Do you want the child to die? Brunn asked. Braud flushed at the pointed question. He is clan Braud. For all that his head is misshapen, he does not appear to be retarded. He will grow up to be a hunter. This is his clan. A mate has even been arranged for him, and you agreed. Why are you so emotional about your mate feeding someone else's baby? Is it still Ayla that you're emotional about? You are a man, Braud. Whatever you command of her, she must obey. And she does obey you. Why do you compete with a woman? You belittle yourself. Or am I wrong? Are you a man, Braud? Are you man enough to lead this clan?
It's just that I don't want a deformed child to be brother to the sons of my mate, Braud gestured lamely.
It was a weak excuse, but he hadn't missed the threat. Braud, what hunter has not saved the life of another? What man does not carry a piece of every other man's spirit? What man is not brother to the rest? Does it matter if Dirk is brother to your mate's sons now, or after they all grow up? Why do you object?
Braud had no answer, none that would be acceptable to the leader. He could not admit to his all-consuming hatred of Ayla. That would be admitting he wasn't in control of his emotions, admitting he wasn't man enough to be leader. He was sorry he had come to Brunn. I should have remembered, he thought, he always takes her side. He was so proud of me at the clan gathering. Now, all because of her, he's doubting me again.
Well, I don't care if Oga nurses him, Braud motioned, but I don't want him at my hearth.
On that point, he knew he was within his rights and would not give.
You may think he's not retarded, but I'm not so sure. I don't want to be responsible for his training. I still doubt that he'll ever be a hunter.
That's your choice, Braud. I assume the responsibility for training him. I made that decision before I ever accepted him. But I did accept him. Dirk is a member of this clan, and he will be a hunter. I'll make sure of it.
Braud turned back toward his own hearth, but saw Kreb bringing Dirk to Oga again, and walked out of the cave instead. He did not give vent to his fury until he was sure he was well out of Brunn's sight. It's all that old cripple's fault, he said to himself, then tried to erase the thought from his mind, afraid that somehow the magician would know what he was thinking.
Braud was fearful of the spirits, perhaps more than any man in the clan, and his fear extended to the one who dwelt so intimately with them.
After all, what could one hunter do against a whole array of incorporeal beings who could cause bad luck or sickness or death? And what could he do against the man who had the power to call them at will?
Thraud had recently returned from a clan gathering where many a night was spent with young men of other clans who tried to scare each other with tales of misfortune caused by Mogurs who had been crossed. Spears turned at the last moment, preventing a kill. Terrible illnesses that caused pain and suffering, gorings, maulings, all kinds of terrifying calamities were blamed on angry magicians. The horror stories were not so prevalent in his own clan, but still, the Mogur was the most powerful magician of all. Though there had been times when the young man thought him more worthy of ridicule than respect, Mogur's malformed body and horribly scarred one-eyed face added to his stature. To those who did not know him, he seemed inhuman, perhaps part demon. Thraud had capitalized on the fear of the other young men, enjoying their look of incredulous awe when he bragged that he did not fear the great Mogur. But for all his swaggering, the stories had left their impression. The reverence of the clan for the stumbling old man who couldn't hunt made Thraud more wary of his power. Whenever he daydreamed of the time when he would be leader, he always thought of Guv as his Mogur. Guv was too close in age and too close a hunting companion for Thraud to view the future magician in the same light. He was sure he could cajole or coerce the acolyte into going along with his decisions, but he didn't dream of taking on the Mogur. As Thraud walked through the woods near the cave, he made one firm decision. Never again would he give the leader cause to doubt him. Never again would he put the destiny he was so close to realizing in jeopardy. But when I'm leader, I'll make the decisions, he thought. She turned Brunn against me. She even turned Oga against me, my own mate. When I'm leader, it won't matter if Brunn takes her side. He won't be able to protect her anymore. Thraud remembered every wrong she had done to him, every time she had stolen his glory, every imagined slight to his ego. He dwelt on them, relishing the thought of paying her back. He could wait. Someday, he said to himself, someday soon, she will be sorry she ever came to live with this clan. Thraud wasn't the only one who blamed the old cripple. Kreb blamed himself for Ayla's loss of mother's milk. It made little difference, now, that it was his concern that had brought such disastrous results. He just hadn't understood the way of a woman's body. He had had too little experience with women. It wasn't until his old age that he had ever come in close contact with a mother and baby. He didn't realize that when a woman nursed another's child, the favor was reciprocated more for her sake than to relieve any obligation. No one had ever told him. No one had to, after it was too late. He wondered why such a terrible calamity had happened to her. Was it just that her child was unlucky? Kreb looked for reasons, and in his guilty introspection, he began to doubt his own motives. Was it really concern, or did he want to hurt her as she had unknowingly hurt him? Was he worthy of his great totem? Had the Mogur stooped to such petty revenge? If he was an example of their highest holy man, perhaps his people deserved to die. Kreb's conviction that his race was doomed, the death of Issa, and his guilt over the sorrow he had caused Ayla plunged him into a melancholy despondency. The most difficult test of Mogur's life came near its end. Ayla didn't blame Kreb, she blamed herself, but watching another woman nurse her son when she couldn't was more than she could bear. Oga, Aga, and Ika had each come to her and told her they would nurse Dirk for her, and she was grateful, but most often it was Uba who brought Dirk to one of them and stayed to visit until he was through. With the loss of her milk, Ayla lost an important part of her son's life. She still grieved for Issa and blamed herself for the woman's death, and Kreb had withdrawn so far into himself that she couldn't reach him and was afraid to try. But every night when she took Dirk to bed with her, she was grateful to Thraud. His refusal to accept him meant her son wasn't lost to her completely. In the waning days of fall, Ayla took up her sling again as an excuse to go off alone. She had hunted so little the past year, her skill was rusty. But with practice, her accuracy and speed returned. Most days she left early and returned late, leaving Uba to care for Dirk, and only regretted that winter was closing in on them so quickly. The exercise was good for her, but she had a problem to overcome. She hadn't hunted much after she became a fully developed woman, and heavy breasts bobbing at every step annoyed her when she ran or jumped. She noticed that men wore a leather loincloth to protect their exposed and delicate organs, and she fashioned a band to hold her bosom in place, tied around her back. It made her more comfortable, and she ignored the curious sidewise glances cast at her when she put it on. Though hunting strengthened her body and occupied her mind while she was out, she still carried her load of grief and sorrow. To Uba, it seemed that the joy had left Kreb's hearth. She missed her mother, and both Kreb and Ayla had an aura of perpetual sadness. Only Dirk, with his unknowing baby ways, brought a hint of the happiness she had once taken for granted. He could even rouse Kreb out of his lethargy on occasion. Ayla had left early, and Uba was away from the hearth looking for something in the back of the cave. Olga had just brought Dirk back, and Kreb was keeping his eye on the boy. He was full and contented, but not very sleepy. He crawled toward the old man and pulled himself up on wobbly, unsure legs, clutching at Kreb for support.
"So, you're going to start walking soon," Kreb motioned. "Before this winter is over, you'll be running all over this cave, young man."
Kreb poked him in his little pot belly to emphasize his gestures. The corners of Dirk's mouth turned up, and he made a sound Kreb had heard from only one other person in the clan. He laughed. Kreb poked him again, and the boy doubled over in a babyish giggle, lost his balance, and sat down on his firm little rump. Kreb helped him up again and looked at the child as he had never looked at him before. Dirk's baby legs were bowed, but not nearly as much as other babies of the clan, and though they were chubby, Kreb could see his bones were longer and thinner. "I think Dirk's legs are going to be straight when he gets older, like Ayla's, and he's going to be tall, too. And his neck, it was so thin and scrawny when he was born, he couldn't hold his head up. It's just like Ayla's neck. His head isn't like hers, though. Or is it? That high forehead, that's Ayla's." Kreb turned Dirk's head to look at his profile. "Yes, definitely her forehead. But the brows and the eyes, they're clan. And the back of his head, that's more like clan, too." Ayla was right. He's not deformed, he's a mixture of her and clan. I wonder, is that the way it always is? Do the spirits mix? Maybe that's what makes girls, not a weak male totem. Does life start with a mixing of male and female totem spirits? Kreb shook his head. He didn't know, but it set the old magician to thinking. He thought often of Dirk that cold, lonely winter. He had a feeling Dirk was important. But just why eluded him? Chapter 27.
"But Ayla, I'm not like you. I can't hunt. Where will I go when it gets dark?" Uba implored. "Ayla, I'm afraid."
The frightened face of the young woman made Ayla wish she could go with her. Uba was not quite 8 years old, and the thought of spending the days alone away from the security of the cave terrified her. But her totem spirit had battled for the first time, and it was required. She had no choice.
"Do you remember that small cave where I hid when Dirk was born? Go there, Uba. It will be safer than staying out in the open. I'll come up to see you every evening and bring you some food. It's only for a few days, Uba. Make sure you take a fur to sleep on and a coal to start a fire. There's water nearby. It will be lonely, especially at night, but you'll be all right. And just think, you're a woman now. You'll be mated soon, and maybe have a baby of your own before long," Ayla consoled. "Who do you think Brunn will choose for me?"
"Who do you want Brunn to choose for you, Uba?"
"Vorn is the only unmated man, though I'm sure Borg will be one soon. Of course, he might decide to make me the second woman of one of the others. I think I'd really like Borg. We used to play we were mated until the time he really tried to relieve his needs with me. It didn't work very well, and now he's shy, and so close to being a man, he doesn't like to play with girls anymore. But One is a woman, too, and she can't mate with Vorn. Unless Brunn decides to give her to a man who already has one mate, there's no one else but Borg for her. I guess that means Vorn will be my mate."
"Vorn has been a man for a while. He's probably eager to mate by now," Ayla said. She had come to the same conclusion herself.
"Do you think you'd like Vorn for a mate?" "He tries to act like he doesn't notice me, but he looks at me sometimes. He might not be so bad."
"Braud likes him. He'll probably be second in command someday. You don't need to worry about the status, but it would be good for your sons. I didn't like Vorn much when he was younger, but I think you're right. He's not so bad.
He's even nice to Dirk when Braud isn't around.
Everyone's nice to Dirk except Braud, Ube said. Everyone loves him.
Well, he certainly makes himself at home at every hearth. He's so used to being handed around to nurse, he even calls every woman mother, Ayla motioned with a fleeting frown. A quick smile replaced her unhappy look.
Remember that time he walked into Grodd's hearth, just like he lived there?
I remember. I tried not to look, but I just couldn't help it, Ubo recalled.
He walked right past Uka, just greeted her and called her mother, and went straight to Grodd and crawled up on his lap.
I know, Ayla said. I never saw Grodd look so surprised in my life. Then he climbed down and went straight for Grodd's spears. I was sure Grodd was going to get mad, but he just couldn't resist that brazen child when he started to drag his biggest spear away. When Grodd took it away from him, he said, Dirk hunt like Grodd.
I think Dirk would have dragged that heavy spear right out of the cave if Grodd had let him.
He takes the little spear Grodd made for him to bed, Ayla gestured, still smiling.
You know, Grodd never says much. I was surprised when he came over that day. He barely greeted me, just went straight to Dirk and put that spear in his hands, even showed him how to hold it. When he walked out, all he said was, if the boy wants to hunt so much, he should have his own spear.
It's a shame Ovra never had any children. I think Grodd would like it if the daughter of his mate had a baby, Ube said.
Maybe that's why Grodd likes Dirk. He's not really attached to any man.
Brunn likes him too, I can tell, and Zaug is already showing him how to use a sling. I don't think he's going to have any problem learning to hunt, even though there isn't a man at his hearth to train him. The way the men act, you'd think every man in the clan is his mother's mate, except Braud, she paused.
Maybe they are, Ayla. Dorv always said every man's totem combined to defeat your cave lion.
I think you'd better go now, Ube, Ayla said, changing the subject.
I'll walk with you part of the way. It stopped raining, and I think the strawberries are ripe. There's a big patch of them part way up the path. I'll come up to see you later.
Guv painted the symbol of Vorn's totem over the symbol of Uba's totem with yellow ochre paste, blurring her mark and showing his dominance.
Do you accept this woman as your mate? Kreb gestured.
Vorn tapped Uba's shoulder, and she followed him into the cave. Then Kreb and Guv performed the same ritual for Borg and Ona, and they went to their new hearth to begin the period of isolation. The summer-dressed trees, still a shade lighter than they would be later, stirred in the light breeze as the congregation broke up. Ayla picked up Dirk to carry him into the cave, but he squirmed to get down.
All right, Dirk, she motioned. You can walk, but come in and have some broth and mush.
While she was preparing breakfast, Dirk wandered out of the hearth and headed toward the new hearth, now occupied by Ube and Vorn. Ayla ran after him and carried him back.
Dirk wants see Ube, the child gestured.
You can't, Dirk. No one can visit her for a while. But if you're good and eat your mush, I'll take you hunting with me.
Dirk be good. Why can't see Ube?
The boy asked, mollified by the promise to go along with his mother.
Why Ube not come eat with us?
She doesn't live here anymore, Dirk. She's made it to Vorn now, Ayla explained.
Dirk wasn't the only one who noticed Uba's absence. They all missed her. The hearth seemed empty with only Kreb, Ayla, and the child, and the strain between the old man and the young woman was more noticeable. They had never found a way to overcome their mutual remorse over the hurt they had caused each other. Many times when Ayla saw the old magician lost in the depths of melancholy, she wanted to go to him, put her arms around his shaggy white head, and hug him as she had when she was a little girl. But she restrained herself, reluctant to force herself upon him. Kreb missed the affection, though he didn't realize its absence added to his depression. And many times, when Kreb saw Ayla's pain as she watched another woman nurse her son, he wanted to go to her. If Issa had been alive, she would have found a way to bring them back together. But without such a catalyst, they drifted farther apart, each longing to show their love for the other, and neither knowing how to bridge the gap that separated them. They were both ill at ease during the first morning meal without Ube.
Do you want more, Kreb? Ayla asked.
No, don't bother. I've had enough, he motioned.
He watched her cleaning up while Dirk dived into a second helping with both hands and a clamshell spoon. Though just a little more than 2 years old, he was essentially weaned. He still sought out Oga and Ika now that she had a new baby again to nurse for comfort and closeness, and because they let him get away with it. Usually, when a new baby was born, any older children still nursing were cut off.
but Ika made an exception in Dirk's case. The child seemed to sense not to push his privilege too far. He never drained her, never deprived her new infant of milk, just cuddled up for a few moments as if to prove he had the right. Olga was lenient toward him, too, and though Grev was technically past his nursing year, he took advantage of his mother's indulgence. Both were often found together on her lap, each suckling a breast until their interest in each other overcame their desire for mothering, and they let go to tussle with each other. Dirk was as tall as Grev, though not nearly as stocky, and though Grev usually won over Dirk when they wrestled playfully, Dirk easily outdistanced the older boy when they raced. The two were inseparable. They sought each other out at every opportunity. "You're going to take the boy with you?" Kreb gestured after an uncomfortable silence. "Yes," she nodded, wiping the child's hands and face. "I promised to take him hunting with me. I doubt that I'll be able to hunt much with him along, but I need to gather some herbs, too, and it's a nice day." Kreb grunted. "You should go out, too, Kreb," she added. "The sun would be good for you." "Yes, yes, I will, Layla. Later." For a moment, she thought she ought to coax him out of the cave with the offer of a walk beside the stream, as they used to do. But he already seemed turned inward. She left him sitting where he was, picked up Dirk, and hurried out. Kreb didn't look up until he was sure she was gone. He reached for his staff, then decided it was too much effort to get up, and put it down again. Ayla worried about him as she started out with Dirk on her hip and her collecting basket strapped to her back. She sensed his mental power was diminishing. He was more absent-minded than ever, and he repeated questions she had already answered. He hardly stirred himself to go out of the cave, even when the weather was warm and sunny. And when he sat for long hours in what he called meditation, he often fell asleep sitting up. Ayla's strides lengthened once she was out of sight of the cave. The freedom of movement and the beautiful summer day eased her concern into a more remote part of her mind. She let Dirk walk when they came to a clearing and stopped to collect some plants. He watched her, then grabbed a handful of grass and purple-flowered alfalfa and pulled it out by the roots. He brought it to her, clutched in his little fist. "You're a big help, Dirk," she motioned, taking it from him and putting it into the basket beside her.
"Dirk, get more," he gestured, running off.
She sat back on her heels, watching her son, tugging at a larger handful. It gave suddenly, and he sat down hard. He screwed up his face to cry, more in surprise than in pain. But Ayla ran to him, picked him up, and tossed him into the air, catching him again in her arms. Dirk giggled with delight. She put him down and pretended she was going to chase him. "I'm going to get you," Ayla motioned. Dirk ran away on his baby legs, laughing. She let him get ahead of her, then chased after him on hands and knees, grabbing him and pulling him over on top of her, both of them laughing at the game. She tickled him just to hear him laugh again. Ayla never laughed with her son unless they were alone, and Dirk learned early that no one else either appreciated or approved of his smiles and giggles. Though Dirk made the gesture for mother to all the women in the clan, in his baby heart, he knew Ayla was special. He always felt happier with her than with anyone else, and he loved it when she took him with her alone, without the other women. And he loved the other game only he and his mother played.
"Ba-ba-na-ni-ni,"
Dirk sounded. "Ba-ba-na-ni-ni," Ayla mimicked the nonsense syllables.
"No-na-ni-ga-gula,"
Dirk voiced another set of sounds. Ayla copied him again, then tickled him. She loved to hear him laugh. It always brought laughter to her own lips. Then she made a set of sounds, sounds she liked to hear him make more than any others. She didn't know why, except it stirred in her a feeling of such tenderness, it came close to bringing tears. "Mama, mama," she said.
"Mama, mama,"
Dirk repeated. Ayla wrapped her arms around her son and held him close.
"Mama,"
Dirk said again. He wriggled to get free. The only time he liked to cuddle for long was when he went to sleep snuggled beside her. She wiped a tear away from the corner of her eye. Watering eyes were one peculiarity he did not share with her. Dirk's large brown eyes, deep set below heavy brow ridges, were clan.
"Mama,"
Dirk said. He often called her by the syllables when they were alone, especially after he was reminded.
"You hunt now?"
he gestured. The last few times she had taken Dirk with her, she spent some time showing him how to hold a sling. She was going to make one for him, but Zaug beat her to it. The old man didn't go out anymore,
but his pleasure in trying to train the boy also pleased Ayla. Though Dirk was young, Ayla could see he would have her aptitude with the weapon, and he was as proud of his miniature sling as he was of his small spear. He liked the attention he got as he strutted with a sling draped through the cord around his waist, all he wore in summer besides his amulet, and a spear in his hand. Grev had to have small weapons, too. The pair of them brought glimmers of amusement to the eyes of the clan, and comments about what fine little men they were. Their future role was already being defined. When Dirk discovered that imperious bossiness to little girls was approved, and even benignly condoned toward grown women, he never hesitated to push the limits aloud, except with his mother. Dirk knew his mother was different. Only she laughed with him. Only she played the game of sounds with him. Only she had the soft golden hair he loved to touch. He could never remember her nursing him, but he would sleep with no one else. He knew she was a woman because she answered to the same motion as the other women. But she was much taller than any man, and she hunted. He wasn't exactly sure what hunting was, except men did it, and his mother. She fit into no category. She was woman, and not woman. Man, and not man. She was unique. The name he had begun to call her, the name made with sounds, seemed to suit her best. She was Mama. And Mama, the golden-haired goddess he adored, did not nod approvingly when he attempted to boss her. Ayla put Dirk's little sling in his hands, and holding hers over his, tried to show him how to use it. Zaug had done the same thing, and he was beginning to get the idea. Then she took her sling from her waist thong, found some pebbles, and hurled them at nearby objects. When she set small stones on larger boulders and proceeded to knock them off again, Dirk thought it was funny. He toddled over with more stones to see her do it again. After a while, he lost interest, and she went back to gathering plants while Dirk followed after her. They found some raspberries and stopped to eat them. "You are a mess, my sticky son," Ayla motioned, laughing at him with red juice on his face, hands, and round belly. She picked him up, tucked him under one arm, and carried him to a creek to wash him. Then she found a large leaf, folded it into a cone, and filled it with water for Dirk and her to drink. Dirk yawned and rubbed his eyes. She spread her carrying cloak out on the ground in the shade of a large oak and lay down beside him until he fell asleep. In the quiet of the summer afternoon, Ayla sat with her back against the tree, watching butterflies flitting, then coming to rest with folded back wings and insects buzzing in perpetual motion, and listened to a twittering symphony of chirping birds. Her mind wandered back to the events of the morning. "I hope Uba will be happy with Vorn," she thought. "I hope he's good to her. It's so empty with her gone, even if she isn't far away. It's just not the same. She'll be cooking for her mate now and sleeping with him after the isolation. I hope she has a baby soon. That would make her happy. But what about me? No one has ever come from that clan to ask about me. Maybe they just can't find our cave. I don't think they were all that interested anyway. I'm glad. I don't want to mate a man I don't know. I don't even want any of the ones I do know, and none of them want me. I'm too tall. Even Drug barely reaches my chin. Issa used to wonder if I would ever stop growing. I'm beginning to wonder myself. Raud hates it. He can't stand having a woman around taller than he is. But he hasn't bothered me at all since we got back from the clan gathering. Why does it make me shudder every time he looks at me? Grun's getting old. Abra's been getting medicine for his sore muscles and stiff joints lately. He's going to make Braud leader soon, I know it. And Guv is going to be Mogur. He's doing more of the ceremonies all the time. I don't think Kreb wants to be Mogur anymore, not since that time I watched them. Why did I go into the cave that night? I don't even remember how I got there. I wish I had never gone to the clan gathering. If I hadn't gone, I might have kept Issa alive for a few more years. I miss her so much, and I never did find a mate. Dirk did, though. It's strange that Yura was allowed to live, almost as if she was meant to be Dirk's mate. Men of the others, Otis said. Who are they? Issa said I was born to them. Why don't I remember? What happened to my real mother, to her mate? Did I have any siblings? Ayla felt a faint queasiness in the pit of her stomach, not nausea exactly, just a sense of unease. Then suddenly, her scalp crawled when she remembered something Issa had told her the night she died. Ayla had pushed it out of her mind. It was too painful to think about Issa's death. Issa told me to leave. She said I wasn't clan. She said I was born to the others. She told me to find my own people, find my own mate. She said Braud would find a way to hurt me if I stayed. North. She said they live north, beyond the peninsula on the mainland. How can I leave? This is my home. I can't leave Kreb, and Dirk needs me. What if I couldn't find any others? And if I did, they might not want me anyway. No one wants an ugly woman. How do I know I'd find a mate, even if I did find some others? Kreb is getting old, though. What's going to happen to me when he's gone? Who will provide for me then? I can't just live with Dirk. Some man will have to take me. But who? Braud? He's going to be leader. If no one else wants me, he'll have to. What if I have to live with Braud? He wouldn't want me either, but he knows I'd hate it. He'd do it just because I'd hate it. I couldn't stand living with Braud. I'd rather live with some man I don't know from another clan. But they don't want me either. Maybe I should leave. I could take Dirk, and we could both go. But what if I didn't find any others? And what if something happened to me? Who would take care of him? He'd be all alone, just like I was. I was lucky that Issa found me. Dirk might not be so lucky. I can't take him away. He was born here. He is clan, even if he is part of me, too. He has a mate arranged for him. What would Yura do if I took Dirk away? Oda is training her to be Dirk's mate. She's telling her there's a man for her, even if she is deformed and ugly. Dirk will need Yura, too. He will need a mate when he grows up, and Yura is just right for him. But I couldn't leave without Dirk. I'd rather live with Braud than leave Dirk. I have to stay. There's no other way. I'll stay and live with Braud if I have to. Ayla looked at her sleeping child and tried to compose her mind, tried to be a good clan woman and accept her fate.
This is the end of disc number 16. Please insert disc number 17. This is disc number 17.
Ayla looked at her sleeping child and tried to compose her mind, tried to be a good clan woman and accept her fate. A fly landed on Dirk's nose. He twitched, rubbed his nose in his sleep, then settled down again. I wouldn't know where to go anyway. North? What does that tell me? Everything is north of here. Only the sea is south. I could wander around for the rest of my life and not find anyone. And they can be as bad as Braud. Oda said those men forced her, didn't even let her put her baby down. It would be better to stay here with a Braud I know than some man who might be worse. It's late. I'd better get back. Ayla woke her son, and as she walked back to the cave, tried to push thoughts of others out of her mind. But stray wisps of wondering kept insinuating themselves. Once recalled, she couldn't quite forget the others. "Are you busy, Ayla?" Uba asked. She had an expression that was both shy and pleased, and Ayla guessed why. She decided to let Uba tell her anyway. "No, I'm not really busy. I've just been mixing some mint and alfalfa and wanted to taste it. Why don't I put some water on for tea?" "Where's Dirk?" Uba asked, while Ayla stirred up the fire and added more wood and a few cooking stones. "He's outside with Grev. Oga's watching them. Those two, they're always together," Ayla motioned. "That's probably because they nursed together. They're closer than brothers. They're almost like two born together." "But two born together often look alike, and they certainly don't. Do you remember that woman at the clan gathering with two born together? I couldn't tell them apart." "Sometimes it's unlucky to have two born together, and three born together are never allowed to live. How could a woman feed three at one time? She only has two breasts," Uba questioned. "With a lot of help. It's enough strain on a woman to have two. I'm grateful Oga has always had plenty of milk for Dirk's sake." "I hope I have plenty of milk," Uba gestured. "I think I'm going to have a baby, Ayla." "I thought so, Uba. You haven't had your woman's curse since you were mated, have you?" "No, I think Vorn's totem has been waiting a long time. It must have been very strong.
Have you told him yet?
I was going to wait until I was sure, but he guessed. He must have noticed that I didn't go into isolation.
He's very happy about it,
Uba motioned proudly.
Is he a good mate, Uba? Are you happy?
Oh, yes. He's a good mate, Ayla. When he found out I was going to have a baby, he told me he waited for me for a long time, and he was glad I didn't waste any time getting one started. He said he asked for me even before I became a woman.
That's wonderful, Uba, Ayla said. She didn't add that there wasn't anyone else in the clan he could have made it except herself. But why would he want me? Why would he want a big, ugly woman when he could have someone as attractive as Uba, and she was born to Issa's line? What's the matter with me? I never wanted to mate Vorn. I guess I must still be thinking about what will happen to me when Kreb is gone. I'm going to have to take good care of him so he lives a long time. It just seems that he doesn't want to live. He hardly ever goes out of the cave anymore. If he doesn't exercise, he won't be able to leave the cave.
What are you thinking about, Ayla? You've been so quiet lately.
I was thinking about Kreb. I'm worried about him.
He is getting old. He's much older than Mother, and she's gone. I still miss her, Ayla. I'm going to hate it when Kreb walks in the next world.
So will I, Uba, Ayla gestured with feeling.
Ayla was restless. She hunted often, and when she wasn't hunting, she worked with tireless energy. She couldn't stand not having something to do. She sorted through the stores of medicinal plants and rearranged them, then scoured the countryside to replenish old or used-up medicines, then reorganized the whole hearth. She wove new baskets and mats, made wooden bowls and platters, containers of stiff rawhide or birch bark, made new wraps, cured and dressed new furs, then made leggings, hats, hand and foot coverings for the next winter. She waterproofed bladders and stomachs for water and other liquids, constructed a new frame firmly tied with thong and sinew to support skins for boiling over the fire. She nicked out flat stones to make a deeper well for fat for lamps, and she dried new moss wicks, napped a new set of knives, scrapers, saws, bores, and axes, searched the seashore for shells to make spoons, ladles, and small dishes. She took her turn traveling with the hunters to dry the meat, gathered fruits, seeds, nuts, and vegetables with the women, winnowed and parched and ground grains to a superfine texture to make it easier for Kreb and Dirk to chew. And still, she couldn't find enough to do. Kreb became the object of her intense interest. Ayla pampered him, cared for him as she never had before. She cooked special foods to encourage his appetite, made medicinal brews and poultices, made him rest in the sunshine, and coaxed him into long walks for exercise. He seemed to enjoy her attention and company, and to regain some of his strength and verve. But there was something lacking. The special closeness, the easy warmth, the long, rambling talks of earlier years were gone. They usually walked in silence. The conversation they did have was strained, and there were no spontaneous demonstrations of affection. Kreb was not the only one growing old. The day that Brunn watched the departing hunters from the ridge until they were tiny dots on the steps below jolted Ayla into a sudden awareness of how much he had changed. His beard was not grizzled, it was gray, and it matched his hair. Deep wrinkles lined his face, cutting chasms into the skin at the corners of his eyes. His hard, muscular body had lost tone. His skin was more flaccid, though he was still powerful. He walked back to the caves slowly, and spent the remainder of the day within the boundaries of his hearth. He went with the hunters the next time, but the second time, Brunn stayed behind. Grad did too, still the loyal lieutenant. One day, near the end of summer, Dirk came running into the cave.
Mama, Mama, a man is coming!
Ayla rushed to the mouth of the cave, along with everyone else, to watch the stranger walking up the path from the seacoast.
Ayla, do you think he might be coming for you?
Uba gestured excitedly.
I don't know. I don't know any more than you, Uba.
Ayla's nerves were taut, and her emotions mixed. She hoped the visitor was from the clan of Zaug's kin, and afraid he would be. He stopped to talk to Brunn, then walked with the leader to his hearth. Not long afterward, Ayla saw Abra leave and head straight for her.
Brunn wants you, Ayla, she motioned.
Ayla's heart beat wildly. Her knees felt like water. She was sure they would never hold her up as she walked to Brunn's hearth. Gratefully, she collapsed at Brunn's feet. He tapped her shoulder.
This is Von Dela, the leader said, motioning toward the visitor. He has traveled far to see you, all the way from Norg's clan. His mother is sick, and their medicine woman has not been able to help her. She thought you might know of magic that could help.
Ayla had established a reputation as a medicine woman of great skill and knowledge at the clan gathering. The man had come for her magic, not for her. Ayla's relief overpowered her regret. Von stayed only a few days, but he brought news of his clan. The young man who had been wounded by the cave bear had wintered with them. He left early the following spring, walking on his own legs, his limp hardly noticeable. His mate had given birth to a healthy son who was named Kreb. Ayla questioned the man and prepared a packet for Von to take back with him, along with instructions for their medicine woman. She didn't know if her remedy would be any more effective, but he had come so far, at least she could try. Brunn thought about Ayla after Von left. He had put off making any decision about her while there was hope that some other clan might find her acceptable. But if one runner could find their cave, others could too if they wished. After so long, he could no longer sustain any hope. Some arrangement would have to be made for her, in his clan. But Braud would be leader soon, and he was the one who should take her. It would be best if that decision came from Braud himself, and as long as Mogur lived, there was no need to rush it. Brunn decided to leave the problem for the son of his mate. He seems to have overcome his violent emotions toward her, Brunn thought. He never bothers her anymore. Perhaps he's ready. Perhaps he's finally ready. But a seed of doubt still remained. The summer drew to its polychrome close, and the clan settled down to the slower pace of the cold season. Uba's pregnancy progressed normally until well beyond her second trimester. Then the stirrings of life stopped. She tried to ignore the growing ache in her back and the discomforting cramps, but when she began spotting blood, she hurried to Ayla. How long has it been since you felt movement, Uba? Ayla asked, concern etched on her face. Not for many days, Ayla. What am I going to do? Vorn was so happy with me when life started so soon after we made it. I don't want to lose my baby. What could have gone wrong? It's so close. Spring will be here soon. I don't know, Uba. Do you remember falling? Did you strain to lift something heavy? I don't think so, Ayla. Go back to your hearth, Uba, and go to bed. I'll boil some black birch bark and bring the tea to you. I wish it were fall. I'd get that rattlesnake root Isa got for me. But the snow is too deep to go very far now. I'll try to think of something. You think about it too, Uba. You know almost everything Isa knew. I have been thinking, Ayla, but I can't remember anything that will start a baby kicking again once it's stopped. Ayla couldn't answer. In her heart, she knew as well as Uba that it was hopeless and shared the young woman's anguish. For the next several days, Uba lay in bed, hoping against hope that something would help, and knowing there was nothing she could hope for. The pain in her back became almost unbearable, and the only medicines that stopped it were those that put her to sleep, a drugged, unrestful sleep. But the cramps would not grow into contractions. Labor would not start. Ovra almost lived at Vorn's hearth, offering her empathetic support. She had been through the same ordeal herself so many times that she, more than anyone, could understand Uba's pain and sorrow. Guv's mate had never been able to bring a baby to full term, and had become even more quiet and withdrawn as the years passed and she remained childless. Ayla was glad Guv was gentle with her. Many men would have turned her out or taken a second woman. But Guv felt a deep attachment for his mate. He would not add to her grief by taking in another woman to have children for him. Ayla had begun to give Ovra the secret medicine Isa told her about that prevented her totem from being defeated. It was too hard on the woman to continue having pregnancies that produced no babies for her. Ayla didn't tell her what the medicine was for, but after a time, when Ovra stopped conceiving, she guessed. It was better that way. On a cold, dismal morning in late winter, Ayla examined Isa's daughter and made a decision. Uba, she called softly. The young woman opened eyes ringed with dark circles that made them seem even more deep-set below her brow ridges. It's time for the ergot. We've got to get the contraction started. There's nothing that can save your baby, Uba. If it doesn't come out, you'll die, too. You're young. You can have another baby, Ayla motioned. Uba looked at Ayla,
then Ovra, then back to Ayla again.
All right, she nodded. You're right. There's no hope. My baby is dead.
Uba's labor was difficult. It was hard to get the contraction started, and it made Ayla reluctant to give her anything too strong for pain, for fear they would stop. Though the other women of the clan stopped by for short visits to offer their encouragement and support, none wanted to stay for long. They all knew her pain and effort would be in vain. Only Ovra stayed to help Ayla. When the stillborn was delivered, Ayla quickly wrapped it with the placental tissue in the leather birthing blanket. It was a boy, she told Uba.
Can I see it?
The exhausted young woman asked. I think it's best that you don't, Uba. It will only make you feel worse. You rest. I'll dispose of it for you. You're too weak to get up. Ayla told Brunn that Uba was too weak. She would dispose of the baby, but she refrained from mentioning anything else. It wasn't a son that Uba had delivered. It was two sons that had never separated properly. Only Ovra had seen the pitiful, sickening thing, barely recognizable as human, with too many arms and legs and grotesque features on a head too large. Ovra had to fight to keep from regurgitating the contents of her stomach, and Ayla swallowed hard herself. This was not Dirk's modification of clan characteristics with hers. This was a deformity. Ayla was glad the grossly malformed thing had not survived long enough for Uba to have had to deliver it live. She knew Ovra would never tell anyone. It was best to let the clan believe Uba had given birth to a normal stillborn son, for Uba's sake. Ayla put on her outdoor clothes and plowed through deep snow until she was far from the cave. She opened the wrappings and left them exposed. It's better to make sure all evidence is destroyed, Ayla thought. Even as she turned to go back, she caught a slinking movement out of the corner of her eye. The smell of blood had already brought the means. Chapter 28. Would you like to sleep with Uba tonight, Dirk? Ayla asked.
No, the boy shook his head emphatically. Dirk sleep with Mama.
That's all right, Ayla. I didn't think he would. He's been with me all day anyway, Uba said. Where did he get that name he calls you, Ayla?
It's just a name he uses for me, Ayla answered, turning her head aside. The clan stricture against unnecessary words or sounds had been so firmly ingrained in Ayla from the time she first arrived, she felt guilty about the word game she played with her son. Uba didn't press, though she knew there was something Ayla was withholding.
Sometimes, when I go out with Dirk alone, we make sounds together, Ayla admitted. He just picked those sounds for me. He can make a lot of sounds. You can make sounds, too. Mother said you used to make all kinds of sounds and words when you were little, especially before you learned to talk, she gestured. I still remember when I was a baby, I used to love that sound you made when you rocked me.
I guess I did when I was little. I don't really remember too well, Ayla motioned. Dirk and I just have a game we play.
I don't think there's anything so wrong with that, Uba said. It's not like he can't talk. I wish these roots weren't so rotten, Uba added, throwing a large one away. It's not going to be much of a feast tomorrow with only dried meat and fish and half-rotten vegetables. If Brunn would only wait a little longer, there would at least be some greens and shoots.
It's not just Brunn, Ayla said. Krebs says the best time is the first full moon after the beginning of spring.
How does he know the beginning of spring, I wonder, Uba remarked. One rainy day looks like another to me.
I think it has something to do with watching the sunset. He's been watching it go down for days. Even when it rains, you can often see where the sun goes to sleep, and there've been enough clear nights to see the moon. Kreb knows.
I wish Kreb wasn't going to make Guv the Mogur, too, Uba said.
So do I, Ayla motioned. He sits around too much doing nothing these days as it is. What will he do with himself when he doesn't even have ceremonies to perform? I knew it had to happen sometime. But this is one feast I'm not going to enjoy.
It will seem strange. I'm used to Brunn as the leader and Kreb as Mogur. But Vorn says it's time for the younger men to lead. He says Braud has waited long enough.
I suppose he's right, Ayla motioned. Vorn has always admired Braud.
He's good to me, Ayla. He didn't even get angry when I lost the baby. He just said he would ask Mogur for a charm to make his totem strong again so it could start another one. He must like you too, Ayla. He even told me to ask you to let Dirk sleep with us. I think he knows how much I like having him around,
Uba confided.
Even Braut hasn't been so bad to you lately.
No.
He hasn't bothered me much, Ayla motioned. She didn't know how to explain the fear she felt every time he looked at her. She could even feel the hair rising on the back of her neck if he stared at her when she wasn't looking.
Treb stayed late with Guv in the place of the spirits that evening. Ayla fixed a light meal for Dirk and herself and put something aside for Treb to eat when he returned, though she doubted if he'd bother to eat it. She had awakened that morning with a feeling of anxiety that grew worse as the day wore on. The cave seemed to close in on her, and her mouth felt dry as dust. She only managed to choke down a few bites, then suddenly jumped up and ran to the mouth of the cave and stared out at the leaden sky and the heavy, soaking rain making small craters in the saturated mud. Dirk crawled into her bed and was already asleep when she returned to the hearth. As soon as he felt her crawl in beside him, he snuggled closer and made a half-conscious gesture that ended with the word Mama. Ayla wrapped her arm around him, feeling his beating heart as she held him, but sleep was long in coming for her. She lay awake, looking at the shadowed contours of the rough rock wall in the dim light of the dying fire. She was awake when Kreb finally returned, but she lay still, listening to him shuffling around, and finally drifted off to sleep after he had crawled into his bed. She woke up, screaming. "Ayla, Ayla," Kreb called, shaking her to bring her fully awake. "What's wrong, child?" he motioned, his eye full of concern. "Oh, Kreb," she sobbed, and threw her arms around his neck. "I had that dream. I haven't had that dream for years." Kreb put his arm around her and felt her trembling. "What's wrong with Mama?" Dirk motioned, sitting up wide-eyed with fear. He had never heard his mother scream before. Ayla put her arm around him.
"What dream, Ayla? The one about the cave lion?"
Kreb asked. "No, the other one. The one I can never exactly remember," she started shaking again. "Kreb, why should I have that dream now? I thought I was all over having bad dreams."
Kreb put his arm around her to comfort her again. Ayla hugged him back. They both suddenly realized how long it had been and held each other with Dirk between them.
"Oh, Kreb, I can't tell you how often I've wanted to hug you. I thought you didn't want me. I was afraid you'd push me away like you did when I was an insolent little girl. There's something else I've wanted to tell you. I love you, Kreb."
"Ayla, I had to make myself push you away even then. But I had to do something, or Brunn would have. I never could be angry with you. I loved you too much. I still love you too much. I thought you were upset because you lost your milk, and it was my fault."
"It wasn't your fault, Kreb. It was mine. I never blamed you."
"I blamed myself. I should have realized a baby has to keep nursing or the milk will stop. But you seem to want to be alone with your grief."
"How could you know? None of the men know much about babies. They like to hold them and play with them when they're full and happy, but let them start fussing, and all the men are quick to give them back to their mothers. Besides, it didn't hurt him. He's just starting his weaning year, and he's big and healthy even though he's been weaned for a long time."
"But it hurt you, Ayla."
"Mama, you hurt?"
Dirk interrupted, still worried about her scream.
"No, Dirk, Mama's not hurt, not anymore."
"Where did he learn to call you that word, Ayla?"
She flushed slightly.
"Dirk and I play a game of making sounds sometimes. He just decided to call me by that one."
Kreb nodded.
"He calls all the women mother. I guess he needed to find something to call you. It probably means mother to him."
"It does to me, too."
"You made a lot of sounds and words when you first came. I think your people must talk with sounds."
"My people are clan people. I am a woman of the clan."
"No, Ayla," Kreb gestured slowly. "You are not clan. You are a woman of the others."
"That's what Issa told me the night she died. She said I wasn't clan. She said I was a woman of the others."
Kreb looked surprised.
"I didn't think she knew. Issa was a wise woman, Ayla. I only found out that night you followed us into the cave."
"I didn't mean to go into that cave, Kreb. I don't even know how I got there." I don't know what hurt you so much, but I thought you stopped loving me because I went into that cave.
No, Ayla. I didn't stop loving you. I loved you too much.
Dirk, hungry, the child interrupted.
He was still disturbed by his mother's scream and the intense conversation.